Next case for argument is McCarthy v. Pollard. Ms. Klingel.
May it please the Court, my name is Cecilia Klingel, and I represent petitioner-appellant Shane McCarthy. While we are sitting here in Chicago, Shane McCarthy is sitting in a prison cell in Waupun, Wisconsin. He isn't there because a jury considered all the relevant evidence and found him guilty. He's there because long before trial, before he was even charged with a crime, before he was appointed a lawyer to represent and protect his interests, the prosecutor in his case directed police not to preserve the most important evidence in this case, the vehicle he was driving.
Well, they certainly didn't know it was important. What do you think is the proper standard for these evidence destruction cases?
The standard that this court should employ is the same one employed by the Wisconsin courts because we are here on habeas. And therefore, the question in this Youngblood claim is whether the evidence was destroyed in bad faith. Because it was, as the Court of Appeals recognized, the Wisconsin Court of Appeals, it was clearly of potential exculpatory value. And therefore, the only question that remains is whether it was destroyed in bad faith.
So you accept the bad faith standard?
I think the bad faith standard governs in Youngblood claims.
What's the evidence of bad faith?
There is much evidence of bad faith. We have a prosecutor, again, making a decision pre-charging when the petitioner is not only lying in a coma, unable to speak, but is not on legal notice either of the charges that are going to be leveled against
him. Why would anyone have thought that brake failure would be a defense?
Because in Wisconsin, the crime with which Shane McCarthy was charged, causing great bodily harm while under the influence of cocaine, has a statutory affirmative defense. And the statutory affirmative defense says...
No, I understand, but why would anyone think that that defense would be applicable in a case like this?
It is certainly potentially applicable when you have a statutory...
I mean, the guy goes crazy and driving at a high speed hits other vehicles, right? No one suspects...
And certainly...
Brake problems in a case like that.
It's certainly a possibility.
Everything's a possibility,
well,
right?
Well, more than just a remote possibility.
He's yes, an extremely remote possibility. Extremely remote.
I don't know that we can...
Brake failures are extremely unusual. This guy's driving... What? How fast was he driving?
I don't believe that that's part of the record.
We had already run into a police call station or something. So I assume he back up and turn around?
He reversed and then went forward through the intersection.
So he backed?
And I do believe he was driving fast. How fast, I don't recall.
Okay. Well, anyway, he backed away from whatever he ran into and then went forward again. Is that what he did?
That is my understanding, yes. So he went through the intersection. He crashes into cars. We have a crime that is based on an accident with a statutory affirmative defense that if you can show the cause of the accident was something other than your intoxication, then, in fact, you actually walk free. It's a full defense. And in that circumstance, while the defendant here, or would-be defendant, is in a coma, the police approach the prosecutor. Clearly, they're aware of the potential value of the vehicle because they say, what should we do with this? Do you want us to hold it as evidence? A pretty clear indication that the police are aware that it has potential value. And the prosecutor says, no, do whatever you regulate.
Well, the whoever has custody of the car, whoever towed the car, the remnants of the car, that person doesn't know anything about the case, right? So it's natural for him to say to the police, do you want this thing or can we, you know, put it into the compactor?
But it's the police who ask.
And the police, they can't think of anything. Who would have thought of brake failure, right?
The police clearly saw a potential evidentiary value in the car and approached the prosecutor about it. And the prosecutor himself, knowing that he was going to charge...
What do you mean the police saw a clearly... Did they say to the prosecutor, well, you know, this wreck could be critical evidence because it might show a brake failure.
They said, should we save it as evidence? Now,
pardon?
Ordinarily, a police officer...
Did they say that?
They said, should we preserve this as
evidence? Did they say what I said?
No, they did not say what you said.
Didn't point the prosecutor to any... They had no theory as to why, no suggestion.
They'd always ask
the
prosecutor before they
destroy it. Theory? What are you talking about?
So they always ask before they... any reason we should keep this? The prosecutor says no, and that's the end of that.
Well, they don't ask about everything at the scene. They didn't pick up pieces of broken glass and say, prosecutor, should we preserve these?
No.
Or grass or dirt.
By and large, police officers have been burned enough by prosecutors so that they always ask before they do it. Take it from an old prosecutor.
I would think they'd put that glass in a bag and give it to the prosecutor.
Yeah.
What we know is that...
Why do you say they wouldn't do that?
Because it is impossible, and in fact, the young blood standard has been identified in order to keep police from...
You answer my question. What makes you think that if there's debris at the scene of an accident, looks like a criminal event, that they would not gather up the debris?
I mean,
it would be relevant. It might be relevant to a tort case or to the prosecution.
I would hope they would gather as much evidence as possible. But
why do you say they wouldn't pick up the pieces of glass?
Because I'm imagining glass shards. Perhaps you're imagining larger ones. My point is that the more remote we get from the evidentiary value...
And what makes
value,
you think that the prosecutor was thinking, yes, there might be a failed brake defense?
The best evidence we have, he doesn't say, gee, I think let's destroy this car because then McCarthy can't prove his case. We're not going to have that kind of evidence here. The best we can get are reasonable inferences from the record. We know that he was contemplating a charge that had a statutory defense that would have required Mr. McCarthy to look at the car. We know that he represented to the court in May of 2005 that it was the first he'd heard of brake failure when the defense attorney mentioned it at the hearing, when in fact two discovery requests had already been filed at that time. And we know that when he was before the jury, he argued to the jury, there's no physical evidence to prove McCarthy's claim, and invited the jury...
But that's after McCarthy had raised this implausible brake failure defense. You don't have any basis for suggesting the prosecutor had this in his mind when he told the police he didn't want the car.
It is a fair inference.
Fair inference. There's nothing to suggest he would have thought of.
You're just
no
more fair than
thought
he is.
Of brake
that's
failure.
Perhaps.
Do you make a distinction between apparently exculpatory and potentially exculpatory?
I think that the court should, and it's certainly an issue that I develop in the briefs, be clear that when the Wisconsin courts employ their standard and state, as the courts did, that the vehicle didn't have apparent exculpatory value, they mean simply that this is not a Trombetta claim, it's a young
blood.
Yeah,
so there's a difference. The way I read it, at least, if it's only potentially exculpatory, there has to be some bad faith entered into this of why they would.
That's right, and it seems to me that really is the fullness of the inquiry.
So you're alleging bad faith, then I guess. And of course, the owner of the car came, looked at it, and decided she did. I don't know what she did.
She didn't have the title.
Okay.
She came and didn't have it. So
this car was this car.
And the car was totaled.
We don't even know who owns the car, apparently.
Jessica Petch is the
she
name
did.
Of the car.
She did. She didn't have a title.
She didn't have the title. On
what would you do with the debris anyway? Sweep it up, take it off?
That's a good question. Though it's important, I think, for the court to focus on the decisional point here.
Do you think that this prosecutor should have been subjected to a disciplinary proceeding?
I think that upon a court finding of bad faith, that could be inappropriate.
That's an evasion.
I think that it's a practical answer to how disciplinary proceedings often...
That's an even further evasion. Do you think he should have been subjected to a disciplinary proceeding?
Yes, I do.
I don't.
He created an unfair trial, and that it is the fairness of the process that the Constitution protects. And Mr. McCarthy never had a fair trial. He didn't have that opportunity. I also want to return to the point that the prosecutor's decision wasn't pursuant to a process or procedure. That's where the Wisconsin courts went wrong. That, in fact, the prosecutor's decision to release the evidence, whether for destruction or to Ms. Petsch to try to fix it, either way would have altered the evidence. And that was a discretionary decision. The Wisconsin courts misplaced their analysis by looking at the TOLOT procedures and saying that they had been followed in the ordinary course of business and that, therefore, there was no bad faith. What we have here is an instance, and Williams v. Taylor suggests this is one of the areas in which habeas can be granted. We have the Wisconsin courts identifying the correct law, but applying that law wrongly to the facts, unreasonably, because the facts to which they apply it are the wrong facts. Now, notice that's not a challenge to the accuracy of their fact-finding process. They have the right facts before them, but they look at the wrong ones. And because of that, this is an unreasonable adjudication in light of Supreme Court precedent in Youngblood. For this claim. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm out of time.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Klingel. Mr. Kinnunen?
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court. On behalf of the respondent in this case, my name is Eric Kinnunen, and the sole issue before the Court is whether or not the State of Wisconsin violated Shane McCarthy's due process rights by failing to preserve the evidence in this case, which was the vehicle. Shane McCarthy was convicted of three counts of causing injury by operation of a vehicle, and he had a controlled substance in his bloodstream, which was tested to be cocaine. Respondent submits that the State of Wisconsin did not violate Mr. McCarthy's due process rights for two reasons. First, the Court of Appeals reasonably applied the case of California v. Trombetta in concluding that the evidence at issue, the vehicle, did not possess an exculpatory value that was apparent at the time of its destruction. Furthermore, the Wisconsin Court of Appeals properly applied the case of Arizona v. Youngblood in concluding that the state did not act in bad faith in authorizing
the vehicle. How much cocaine and alcohol did he have in his blood?
I don't have the exact figure in front of me.
Well, I mean, was it significant? Was it the sort of thing that would might cause impairment? Although, I don't know that it matters. He was fleeing the police. That's dangerous activity, even if you're not.
Generally speaking.
I believe at trial there was some dispute as to when he ingested the cocaine, if it was on the day in question or the day before. The prosecutor was suggesting that there was enough in the bloodstream to suggest that he did have the cocaine on the day in question. Under the crime that he was charged with, the state didn't have to show that there was any impairment because of the cocaine,
right,
but rather that there was simply a detectable amount of cocaine in the bloodstream. Furthermore, as was referenced in the briefs, the arresting officer believed that there was an odor of alcohol on Mr. McCarthy, and that was at dispute at trial as to whether or not he had alcohol in his system. However, it's undisputed that he definitely had cocaine in his system, and that is not in dispute. So the first question is whether or not this evidence is apparent or potentially exculpatory. And employing the standard used, articulated in Youngblood and reiterated by this court, evidence does not have an apparent exculpatory value if it would have provided simply an avenue of investigation that might have led in any number of directions. And that's exactly what the vehicle could have done in this situation. It's possible that had the vehicle been preserved and tested, that it would have exonerated Mr. McCarthy. However, it's also possible that had the vehicle been preserved and tested, that it would have shown that the brakes did not fail. It's also possible that the car was so total that testing the brakes would have been impossible. There are a number of possibilities, and therefore, this was not apparently exculpatory, but rather potentially exculpatory. And once we've determined that, then we go into Youngblood, which requires, in cases of potential exculpatory evidence, that there be a finding of bad faith on the part of the state at the time of its destruction. In this case, I submit that on the basis of the record, there's simply not enough evidence there to suggest any bad faith on the part of the state.
Did he testify that he'd had brake problems earlier with the car?
He didn't. Couple of things. First of all, it wasn't his car. It was his friend's car that he was borrowing. He did not testify that the car had any history of brake failure. He did testify that on the day in question, his brakes failed.
failed when he sped away from the police, not earlier the day.
That is correct.
He didn't say he'd detected brake fade before.
No.
The critical moment.
It just
it was
so
a
happened.
Sudden.
Correct. It just so happened, according to McCarthy, that as he was pulling away from police after they caught him soliciting the officer, undercover officer for sex, that as he was pulling away, his brakes failed. As he was driving at a high rate of speed, the speed itself is not listed in the record, but the circuit court did refer to it as a high rate of speed, crashed onto the police call box. He had to reverse the car came to a complete stop, reversed the car, got off that call box, proceeded
again.
When
he reversed it, he put on the brakes to stop it, I assume, otherwise he'd still be going backwards.
It's unclear.
No beef there, so then he takes off forward.
Did he say that his brakes failed before he hit the call box?
His story was that the brakes failed prior to the call box.
But then he has no case at all. Because his brakes fail, he keeps driving, and he hits people. If your brakes fail...
How do you stop it?
His brakes fail, he hits the call box. Now he's stopped.
That's correct.
Now, if you know your brakes have failed, you get out. You don't keep driving, right? At a high rate of speed. Why wouldn't that completely destroy his case?
I would think so, although his defense would probably be, I don't want to speculate on this, but is that he was so scared of the police as
robbers.
Oh,
that's ridiculous.
That he proceeded to go again.
You're not accepting that.
I'm not accepting that.
Okay.
So again, with respect to bad faith, I think it's significant that the police in this case did follow procedure. It asked the prosecutor exactly if they had any recommendations for what to do. The prosecutor said, just do what you normally do under the circumstances. Pursuant to this, the city policy, they contacted the rightful owner, which was Mr. McCarthy's girlfriend, and she actually did come down to the lot. She did not have the proper paperwork, the title papers with her, so she left. She never came back, so they destroyed the vehicle. And again, this vehicle, it was totaled. There wasn't a great deal of value to it, so they destroyed the vehicle. And it wasn't until later, after his arrest, and actually several months later, that the first allegation of this.
Some decisions are irrevocable. Destroying the machine is one of them.
Absolutely.
Can't go back and get a do-over, you know.
Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Cannon. So, Ms. Klingel, have anything further?
She ran out of time.
I know. We'll give her a minute.
Two things, Your Honors, and then I'll leave you alone. One, I think that the evidence before this court right now is sufficient to grant a writ of habeas corpus. If you disagree, then at the very least, this case needs to be remanded to the district court for consideration.
Well, is it true that his brakes failed before he hit the call box?
Yes, that brings me to point two. I want to point out that although you are incredulous, the jury acquitted.
That is the end of. That's the end of your case.
The jury acquitted Mr.
His brakes failed. His brakes failed. He hits the call box, and he starts up driving again with no brakes.
He
knows he has no brakes.
He hit the call box. The police came out of the car. They were an unmarked car. The jury acquitted him of injury to the police officer when he backed up because they apparently believed his story that they didn't look like police officers. They had a gun pointed
at
his
head.
He took off.
But how did he stop the car when he was backing up without brakes?
It's not clear that he did stop the car. I think he just switched gears.
Well, he had to stop the car because he got forward again.
Right, switching gear. I mean, this car was damaged.
Did you ever hear a crunching gearbox when that happens?
I have not hit one, no. But it's,
I was a cab driver. I understand the program.
You may. However, his car malfunctioned, and the malfunctioning appeared to get worse.
But if the accident occurred when he knows he has no brakes.
If you're trying to talk her into taking your position, you won't.
The police officer with a gun to his, although he doesn't know he's a police officer.
What he wants you to do is to...
No, this is ridiculous.
What you want?
Nevertheless, you have certainly put up... You've certainly put up a really great fight for your client, and we thank you for accepting the appointment.
Indeed.
And our last case for argument, United States...